Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of the Cult Pop Show podcast was brought to you by our Patreon. If you want to tell us which films we should watch, get up to 2 extra exclusive podcasts a month, give us something to talk about in the post-credits scene at the end of each episode, or join us for our monthly movie club Zoom call where we discuss a film together, then please consider joining the cult and donating at www.patreon.com/cultpopshow. Hey, sports fans.
Hello. hey, everybody. Welcome to the Cult Pop Show podcast. Richard and I are in the same room together.
Hello.
Just going to adjust my microphone.
Yeah, look, we're touching right now.
Touch me.
No.
Touch me.
They don't need to know that we actually didn't touch.
Well, hey, Merry Christmas for yesterday.
Yeah, for yesterday.
And for a few days ago.
And for a year from now.
We're of course in our Christmas holiday break here in New Zealand, which is why Richard and I are in the same city for the first time in a long time.
I was here like 3 weeks ago. Yeah,
that's true. I should sound all great now that I've adjusted my microphone in real time for everyone. We're here to do a special bonus episode of Film Franchise Fortnights to close out the year for a couple of reasons. One, we weren't ready to do Most Disappointing of 2020 Part 2. And two, having just done the Muppets movies, both non-theatrical and theatrical for Film Franchise Fortnights, even though the relationship between the Muppets and Sesame Street is a bit complicated, it didn't feel right to not talk about the two Sesame Street movies. So that's what we're doing today for a sort of casual, laid-back Film Franchise Fortnights about the movies Sesame Street Presents, Follow That Bird, and The Adventures of Elmo and Grouchland, which we'll get to in just a second. I would like to reiterate what the relationship between Sesame Street and the Muppets
be my guest.
So, as far as I can tell, essentially, Jim Henson creates the Muppets in like the 50s, right? Sesame Street gets made in the 50s or the 60s, right?
69 was the debut of the Muppet Show, of Sesame Street.
Okay, there you go. And they were like, we need puppets. Jim Henson, who runs his company, the Muppets, is like, I have puppets that we can use. They're called the Muppets, right? And this is why you get people like Kermit the Frog in Sesame Street sketches.
I think you're not entirely correct there. So Sesame Street predates the Muppets.
Yes.
It
predates the show, the Muppets.
Well, but the idea, puppets made by the Jim Henson Company are called Muppets.
Yes.
So that's just like what they're called.
Yes.
And then there's a troupe of famous Muppets who call themselves the Muppets.
Yes.
And so that's essentially it. It's like the characters on Sesame Street are Muppets, but they're not members of the Muppets.
Yes.
It's like, it's like if we went on tour as the New Zealanders.
Right.
And it's like, or the Kiwis. It's like, everyone from New Zealand is a Kiwi. We're just calling ourselves the Kiwis.
Yes. It wouldn't be wrong to say the Muppets and Sesame Street take place in the same fictional universe.
I think because of what we spoke about last week with the Muppets kind of layers of reality, that's not always true, but yeah, more
right,
or less.
You're right. But so in the Muppet movie, Big Bird appears in Muppets Take Manhattan, I believe, a lot of the Muppets. And actually some of the Fraggle Rock characters.
Yeah, in Great Muppet Caper, Oscar the Grouch shows up and refers to it as a very brief cameo. The primary difference between the two as well is the age demographic. Sesame Street is very much a kids' show. And the Muppet Show is kind of like a precursor to something like The Simpsons, I guess.
Yeah.
That it's like using a medium traditionally reserved for kids shows and doing more kind of adult things with it, but not in the same way that like Rick and Morty does, where it's like you wouldn't let your kids watch this. It's more you can watch this with, it's not for your kids necessarily, but if you watch it with your kids, they're not going to ask you awkward questions.
Yeah.
Whereas Sesame Street is like, this is primarily for
children's education.
Yeah.
And so I guess with the amount of cameos that we get, and there is a Kermit the Frog cameo in Follow That Bird as well.
Because he was a Sesame Street character first.
Right, which is why I feel like our comprehensive coverage of the Muppet movie universe should probably include the Sesame Street.
But it's also primarily the thing about us not having time.
Yes, which we had time to do now. So we thought it'd be fun to do. So I'd never seen Follow That Bird, but I'd seen Elmo and Grouchland years and years ago.
Yeah.
And because this is a casual laid back podcast, I wish I had like a beer to crack open, but I don't.
Do you know, you have a bottle of absinthe downstairs.
That's true. Do you want some absinthe while we talk about Sesame Street?
Yeah, just sipping on.
We're covering one movie each. We're like emceeing the show for one movie each.
Yeah.
So you're starting with
Follow That Bird.
1985's Sesame Street presents Follow That Bird.
Okay, so AJ, what's Follow That Bird about?
Well, this is Big Bird's big movie. This is Big Bird. He lives on Sesame Street again, just like with the Muppets. We're presuming you know a base knowledge of Sesame Street as we go into this.
Yeah, I'm hoping you can tell me how to get there.
Well, do they tell you how to get there in the song? I don't think they do. They just ask.
Yeah, I guess not.
It's one of life's great mysteries.
Yeah.
Can you tell me, not where is Sesame Street, can you tell me how to get there?
Well, the answer is no.
The answer is no. There is a social worker of company of birds.
Yeah.
So they're Muppet birds. One of them's a social worker named Miss Finch. And she learns that Big Bird lives by himself in Sesame Street. And so she goes there to dehome him and basically say, because you're a bird and you don't have a family, you need to go live with a bird family. So she sends him to go live with the dodos. The dodos aren't like Dursley bad, but they're just weird.
They're incompetent.
And Big Bird doesn't really like them. So he decides to walk back to Sesame Street, which he approximates will only take 3 hours because it was an hour's plane flight to get to the place.
Because where does he get sent to? It's like,
it's Minnesota, I think.
No, it's not. It's
Missouri?
Like Iowa?
Oh, yeah. Yes, it's like Iowa.
Oregon?
Yeah, somewhere like that. Whereas Sesame Street is in New York. Page,
yeah.
And so Big Bird decides he's going to walk home. He is then pursued by Miss Finch. He is also pursued
by Illinois.
He is also pursued by a gang of circus people.
Freaks?
Well, no, they're not freaks. They want to get him because he is a freak. Because he's a big bird. He's a big bird, I'll say it. He's a freak. He is. While also the main characters from Sesame Street, not just Cookie Monster and
the Count.
And Oscar the Grouch, but also the human characters of Sesame Street are looking for him the other way, thinking that if they go certain routes, they're bound to run into him.
Because there's only a few ways he can walk, so they'll run into it at some point.
He ends up getting captured by the circus where he turns blue. Turns into a blue bird.
He gets painted
bird.
Blue.
Does he? Yeah. I missed that. He turned blue.
This is really interesting, and we'll come back to this.
And he then the people from Sesame Street sort of find him, and he escapes with them. And then the social worker turns up, and he's like, "No, this is my family.
Like, this is a family. It's okay that we're mixing races."
Yeah.
And the social worker's like, "Well, I never thought of that, but I guess." So. You'd never seen this movie?
I knew it existed because when we were putting together the franchise list in 2016 and we put down the Muppet movies, I remember thinking, I know there's Elmo and Grouchland and looked up to see if there are any more finding Follow That Bird. Mm. And when Big Bird appears in the Muppet movie during the Moving Right Along song, when I first saw that, I actually incorrectly believed that was a direct crossover with Follow That Bird and they've intercepted his journey, and that when you go and watch Follow That Bird, you'll see that scene from Big Bird's perspective. It's not. That's actually Big Bird going to
break into public television.
Yeah, yeah.
So my knowledge of this film came from when I was very young, pre-COVID. My sister watched this film just like, one day, and I think she must have been like 5, so I would have been like 2. Mm-hmm. Because it gets quite sad in some parts, mm-hmm. Especially when Big Bird ends up blue, that like she bawled her eyes out, was like traumatized by this film. And so it was like a running joke in my family for 25 years that like this movie Follow That Bird is like, you know, one of the most emotionally damaging things to happen to my family, well, to my sister at least. And it was like this thing of like, have you mentioned Follow That Bird? It's like, no. Like,
how quick, often does it get mentioned?
Oh, constantly. No, like, it would just come up and we'd joke about Follow That Bird. But we also have one, you know, those little the books with the golden spine.
The golden spine books,
The, like the little golden book, I think. And we had the novelization of Follow That Bird. But it was
the novelization of it.
But it's like, you know, it's like a dozen pages long and it only covers one part of the, I think it's when he's at the farm. Right. It just covers that part. But the one thing I knew about this film from that, from like talking about like what made it so sad, is that Big Bird is so sad he turns blue. And I was told, and because I watched this with my mom and my sister, because being down at Crush, I was like, oh, I need to watch Follow That Bird for the podcast. And they're like, no. But oh, come on.
Sorry, mate.
AJ just dropped his phone, which I can see because I'm right here. the whole thing is that they've captured Big Bird, the bad guys, and they say, oh, what are we going to do? Everyone's looking for an 8-foot-tall yellow bird. And they go, oh, a yellow bird. And then so they think they're not looking for an 8-foot-tall blue bird. So they paint him blue. And all this time I was led to believe, and my mum was led to believe, that Big Bird got so sad he turned blue because that was how my 5-year-old sister had explained what happened in the film. And so she thought that something actually happened where he was so blue emotionally that he physically turned blue. But yeah, so that was funny to find out the truth about behind that. But yeah, so this is my first time watching the film, or at least I was probably in the room when my sister was watching it, but I was 2 years old. So what did you think of the film?
I think by and large, it's like, yeah, it's the Muppets. You're going to enjoy it. And it's Sesame Street, which has a sweetness to it that I think can be enjoyed at any age.
Yeah, but it is still not as strong as any of the Muppets.
No, I didn't think so. But
that also comes from the demographic thing.
Yeah, but I also thought on that demographic thing, I wonder if the Sesame Street ethos doesn't work in feature length, because a feature, like the TV show, is like, you've got to learn how to say your ABCs. And it's
that's a thing.
It's not adventures. And when you do follow that bird and you've got to create a storyline to it, I think this film, for a film that is a Sesame Street film, it has some pretty troubling messages for children.
Like, it's okay to jump out of a moving
vehicle. It's okay to jump out of a moving vehicle. That's crazy.
Big Bird says it's not, and he's given explicit permission.
Yeah. Which is, I guess, them trying
their way around it,
Because when they rescue him, he has to jump out of the trailer onto the car. And it's like it's a scene from an action movie.
Mm.
But it's with Big Bird, which is like, all these things work except for when you realize and you remember Sesame Street's social responsibility as like educational television.
Yeah. And because like the thing about like educational television, especially like of this kind and like Blue's Clues, I remember when I was a kid that they would play the same episode of Blue's Clues every morning for 5 days. And they would play a thing that's like, kids learn from repetition. So we're playing it. Like, this is the fourth time we're playing this episode this week. Which, when you were like, you'd grown up out of needing repetition, was infuriating.
Yes, man. The only time I ever saw Blue's Clues was when I'd grown out of that stage.
But so it's like when you can just do a whole segment on like, pause Sesame Street. We're just going to talk about the letter B and what that means. And and it's like, you're not really watching Sesame Street for like, well, what's going to happen to Big Bird and his friends this week?
The gripping story.
Yeah. And so, it is weird to see it translated. And I think that probably is one of the reasons it doesn't work quite as well as the Muppets. It does attempt a few of the little like winks and nods to the camera about like, you know, we know we're in a movie, like, or like the meta kind of stuff that the Muppets does. But it feels more kind of forced, because it's like, well, the Muppets do this, so we have to do it. But it's like, well, who was this for?
And there's a very funny joke in it, actually, where the Count they're trying to find out which key, they're quietly trying to find out which key opens Big Bird's cage to break it loose from the circus, and they're like, is it this one? This one? And then the count's like, one! And they're like, shh! And he's like, oh, door! And I thought that was really funny. And the other troubling message that this movie has is, don't trust social workers.
That's troubling, because
social workers, I can tell you, at least in New Zealand, by and large, are well-meaning people. Yeah. And
they just want you to be with your race. And because I think that's the other thing is the other thing on this film is that it's a very powerful race allegory.
You reckon?
Yeah.
How so?
Well, because it's like you're a bird, you have to live with other birds, and then you know he's ripped away from his family, and it's about like you know. Families, who you choose your family to be, you choose your family.
It's Rise of Skywalker.
It is. At the end, they're like,
what's your name? And he's like, Big Bird. And they're like, Big Bird who? And
Big Bird Sesame Street.
Big Bird Sesame Street. I don't know. I didn't enjoy this. It was kind of a struggle to get through, but mainly because it's preschool aimed more than anything else.
What do you think it has a Rotten Tomatoes?
72.
You're way off, mate. It has 92.
Right.
Yeah. It generally got pretty good reviews. It's considered a box office disappointment. It made $13.9 million. Very low. But that's
$13.9 million.
It opened the same weekend as Fright Night.
Oh,
yeah,
we've seen that movie.
Which I presume wouldn't have much crossover of audience, but it also received stiff competition from Mad Max, Beyond Thunderdome, and Back to the Future.
I was going to say, because 1985, I think of is Back to the Future.
Yeah, a lot of big films, and also like 84 had some big ones that were re-released. This was Jim Henson's final appearance in a... theatrical release because Kermit the Frog does appear in this. He also voices Ernie. Kermit the Frog, when Big Bird goes missing from the Dodo family, Kermit the Frog is the reporter on the ground. And boy, was I excited to see our old friend Kermit again.
Yeah.
Like it was, he's enigmatic and he stands out from the crowd. He's one hell of a frog, I tell you that.
Did you like the Chevy Chase cameo?
Yeah, and the John Candy cameo.
Yeah. It says a lot about an actor on which, if they cameo in the Muppets or
Sesame Street. Yeah, Chevy Chase's cameo felt, I'm too good for this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's Chevy Chase's style, like, especially at the time. It's kind of he was very much the Joel McHale of his era. And like, yeah, he's kind of sarcastic and like playing up the fact that he's a bit of a dick. Whereas John Candy's felt a bit more like Orson Welles at the end of the Muppet movie, where it's like, okay, what's the most beloved star we can think of to just show up and smile and save the day?
Mm.
Yeah, even though Orson Welles doesn't smile in it, but it's very like, we know they're going to be okay because John Candy's here.
Trust cops. There's another message in this movie that's maybe not.
But yeah, it was like, you know, John Candy being one of the most beloved film stars of the 80s, but like it was very much like the saving the best for last kind of thing.
Right.
In the same way that Orson Welles was.
Mm. So Bert and Ernie, you mentioned them, and they're in the next movie as well. Ernie? Well, Bert and Ernie are both in this. And on Christmas Day, I shared a post on our Instagram of Bert and Ernie sharing a Santa suit and said, Happy Christmas from your favorite Culpeper boys. And the inevitable happened, Richard. Later on in the day, you messaged me and you said, which one of us is Bert and which is Ernie? And I thought that could be a fun discussion to have because I think there is a perception of our dynamic from what I've talked to on the Discord. And it's funny because I knew you would ask this when I put it up, and I was like, which one are we?
Well, I kind of knew you were expecting me to ask you as well.
And so you asked me, and I said, I think there's
it was more like I thought you must have thought about it, and so I was yes-anding you by allowing you to tell me.
So, you asked me, and I said there's probably a good argument that we're both. You know, we've had this discussion before with Woody and Buzz. We never really reached a proper
Yugi and Kaiba.
Yeah, there's not really a proper thing. And again, and bringing up Yu-Gi-Oh, depending on the episode, one of us is the grouchy one, and one of us is the silly one. And you said, that you, Richard, are inarguably Bert, and I'm Ernie. And I think that is the easiest.
Based on the
characters we play. And I get that. I get that I'm the one that giggles a lot more. I'm always going...
I'm always dusting my paperclip collection.
Yeah, well, not... Okay, well, that's a good example of where the dynamic switches.
Sorry, move my mic. As I... tell the story. Oh god, and I've moved into the wrong place. I'm just putting it back where it was. I was in Australia. I think I turned on, like, was flicking through the channels, and it was Sesame Street, and I was like, oh, let's watch this for a couple of seconds, and it was Ernie comes up to Bert. He's like, what are you doing there, Bert? And Bert's like, oh, I'm just dusting my paperclip collection. I thought it was so funny.
And I can see you're also, I guess, the more what am I trying to say here without it being in any way derogatory? And I'm truly don't mean it derogatory. Pejorative is more the word I should have used. Like, you are the grumpier one of the two of us, yeah?
Yeah, well, yeah, deadpan as well.
Deadpan, that's a great way to put it.
I was, an email was sent out to, pretty much the whole company I work at to say I've got a new position at the company, and he said Richard, known for his desert dry wit.
That's excellent.
It's so funny.
I got told when I left my job that my boss said, I know you don't feel like you're cut out for this job. So very similar. That was great. My speech was basically, I've always kind of wanted to be a film teacher. I guess I just didn't want to be one for very long.
Yeah,
that was my speech. And I guess, you know, by and large, I'm the one that I'm a lot more giggly, which, by the way, is actually an intentional creative decision. I'm pulling back the curtain here, but I don't actually laugh this much in real life. I just understand that laughter fills in the silences.
Yeah, and See, whereas I'm the opposite. I actually laugh a lot more in real life. I do. Yeah. Like that's the thing. Like, I feel like in my personal life, I am, like, one of the things I would be, like, known for my distinct laugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you hear on the podcast.
Well, and my laugh is distinct as well, but yours is cooler. Your laugh
Mine's
is cooler.
Surprising. People have genuinely been, like, when Jess and I were on, our first date together, we went to the movies, and I laughed at, I can tell you what the joke was as well. We had to go see David Brent, Life on the Road, the movie, the oft-forgotten movie that came after The Office. And a character puts on glasses that has a penis for a nose, like, you know, the Groucho Marx glasses, mm-hmm. but with a penis for a nose. And he's like, who am I? Fuck nose. And I let out a guttural belly laugh, and Jess was terrified.
Wow. An ex-girlfriend once described my laugh as Krusty the Clown, she told her new boyfriend, and he told me that information several times.
Oh, nice. To, like, neg you?
I don't know if he was trying to neg me.
Trying to get one up on
you. He's the kind of guy who could be listening, who I think felt insecure in the relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was like a way to be like, you're dumb.
Yeah,
she thinks you're dumb, even though I wasn't trying to get her back or anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Let us know what other famous dynamic duos we fit into. The thing that always happens with these, though, is they were always both offended by it. Like, because it's like people go, oh, Richard's so Bert and AJ's such an Ernie. And it's like, what? I wouldn't have said I'm Ernie, but I'm such a Bert. What does that mean?
Yeah, you're right. And because neither of us have Ernie's sunny disposition, the defining characteristic of Ernie. Yeah. We're actually
he's a rascal.
We're both very negative people. I think that the reason Ernie may be attributed to me, this thing we're defending that no one has accused us of being, is because Ernie's the prankster of the two. The defining moment in this podcast history was a prank that I Ernie'd and you Berted to, right? Because I identify with Bert. Like, without considering you in the dynamic, I identify with Bert a lot more than Ernie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and I like Bert more than Ernie.
Yeah.
I think Bert is funnier because of the role he plays in the dynamic.
Yeah. Well, they're Chandler and Joey as well.
Which one are you? Which one are me?
I'm Chandler.
I'm Joey? I hate all the Friends characters.
No, although...
I feel like I'm Ross, though, which I also know is the worst one. I just think I'm...
Yeah,
I'm more Ross-like in my personality.
Out of the two of us, I might say that I'm... Like, it's less that you're more Chandler, and it's that I probably am more Joey than you.
Mm.
But if it's if you're Ross, then I'm more Chandler than you.
Right. Very interesting. So I think for those who are wanting an answer to this, sure. If gun to our heads, I'm Ernie and Richard's Bert. But yeah. I couldn't be Ernie forever, my God.
Yeah.
But I could be Bert forever.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. But yeah, like if you were to say to someone, oh, choose a random episode of the podcast and tell me which one is which, and they choose Yu-Gi-Oh, they'll be like, oh, yeah, Richard's the fun-loving one.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Which is, I actually don't. I hate fun.
And, like, to describe me in any circumstance as fun-loving is feels like an inaccurate...
Oh, God, yeah.
This is all to say that we're both Bert. We're actually both more Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh, I think.
Yeah.
And that we're both miserable people.
Yeah, let us know some other dynamic
duos. We both did a which fictional character are you quiz recently, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Oh, God, I don't know where my answers would be.
I don't remember what I got either.
It
was someone I'd never heard of that I got.
Mine was
Haymitch
from Hunger Games. And it's like this really interesting quiz. It's like, you know, you do the Myers-Briggs personality test, which gives you like ENTP, the full letter thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But it tells you like what fictional characters you're most like. And my top ones, my top one was Haymitch from The Hunger Games. Up top, yeah, like Hugh House, Jeff Winger.
Mm-hmm. These are all pretty accurate though.
Yeah.
Whereas I got things like Nick from New Girl. I got Hurley. I got Bubbles from The Wire.
Who's a
homeless.
I remember
drug
when you sent me the list. I remember thinking like the defining characteristic of all these people is that they don't have their life together.
They're down on their luck, losers. Was all the ones I got, which isn't again inaccurate to me. But you would never describe Ernie as a down on his luck loser. Which Muppet or Sesame Street character is a down on their luck loser?
Do you know who we are?
Who?
Statler and Waldorf.
Yeah, we talked about that. Didn't we talk about that last
probably.
Week? We're Statler and Waldorf because we're movie podcasters. But like, excluding them, I feel like maybe I'm more Fozzie than anyone else.
Right, yeah.
Like my heart, I'm a Kermit at heart, but I'm outwardly too cynical and obnoxious
I found my thing. So Haymitch Abernathy, Stephen Hyde from that 70s show. Dr. Cox from Scrubs, House, Jeff Winger, Rick Sanchez, Jack Donaghy.
You fucking Rick. You are Rick, aren't you?
Berta from Two and a Half Men. who else is in here? There's a bunch of people. Rust from True Detective.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Ian Malcolm. April Ludgate. Bunch of, sarcastic assholes.
You got Rust from True Detective.
Yeah. But then I did it again, I think, because it's like... You can do it again, but like with more questions. And I got David Levinson from Independence Day. That's Jeff Goldblum's character, right?
Okay.
I haven't seen Independence Day. Top character there that I've heard of was House. And I got Miranda from Sex and the City. So I guess that a definitive answer to the question.
Wow.
Are you a Samantha? No, I'm a Miranda.
Do you remember when Tim told me that I was Carrie and you knew, and then that was how I found out. And I was like, oh my God, of course. Like I'd written off Carrie. I was like, oh, I'm not Carrie, so I must
yeah
be.
Well, you have pretty severe protagonist syndrome.
I think that's a good perception of me. I don't know if it's entirely accurate.
You did write and direct a pilot about your life.
Yeah, but hasn't everyone? I feel more like a background character in a sitcom, like a recurring background character who's just a two-dimensional joke. I don't know, probably one of my flatmates, I imagine.
Okay, not me.
Well, I mean, you're the sitcom of my flatmate. My flatmate's the main character.
Yeah.
I'm not even talking about a specific flatmate. I'm just saying someone in my life is probably more the main character.
Right. Well, or maybe, you know, I when we lived together, I was the main character and now I've spun off you've spun off. So yeah, maybe you have protagonist, but you've failed spin-off syndrome. Yeah.
I'm Joey again.
Oh my god.
Joey again. Ah.
That should be your sitcom.
Joey again.
Joey again.
That's what AJ stands for, but backwards. There's that crazy laugh. Hey, let's...
I do have a couple of pieces of IMDb trivia. Okay. Some dumb, some not. I do now have to scroll back through my photos because I screenshotted them. So here's fun. Here's one.
Mm-hmm.
When Big Bird is being welcomed home at the end of the movie, you get a quick glimpse of a character in the window that was definitively Elmo. The movie was made before he was even considered a character on the show.
Yeah.
I love the fact that it was definitively Elmo.
You can't tell me it wasn't.
Yeah. Mm. And then there's another one. Oh, the only of the main regular cast of the show appearing in this film, only Northern Calloway, who played David, was absent because he was barred from entering Canada due to a criminal record dating back to an incident on September 19th, 1980, when he went on a violent, frenzied rampage in Nashville, Tennessee due to mental illness. And then he sought medical help so he could resume work on the show until a couple of later incidents ultimately caused his dismissal in 1989, and then he died a year later. Just 4 months before the similarly untimely passing of Jim Henson. That one wasn't as fun or as funny, but it caught my eye.
Is this a dumb piece of IMDb trivia?
No, I said some were dumb, some were not. Okay. That was one that was not. That was just very sad.
I agree.
And now, with that...
we move on to The Adventures of Elmo in Grouchland, which came out in 1999.
Oh, sorry. One more thing about Follow That Bird. It was directed by Ken Kwapis. Do you remember that name?
No.
He directed, among other things, The Sister of the Traveling Pants.
No shit.
Imagine if
I remembered that name.
Follow That Bird. I remembered the name. I can't remember from where. But he, that was his directorial debut. It says, although whenever it says that, then you go to their page and it has like one film before that. This is just a full-on film. He also directed Dunstan Checks In at License to Wed, and he's just not that into you. And he's attached to the upcoming Sisterhood Everlasting.
Is that what it's called?
I guess.
Bad. Bad.
Bad.
The Adventures of Elmo in Grouchland, 1999, directed by Gary Holverson. Shall we see what else he made?
Yeah, let's mine this for content.
The King and I in 2018.
Wow, that was him.
And The Quintessential Peggy Lee in 1984, which was direct-to-video. So not a lot. He directed some episodes of Muppets Tonight. He directed Elmo's Christmas Countdown, which is a TV movie.
All right.
What do you think this has on Rotten Tomatoes?
46.
77.
Oh, yeah.
Make with that information what you will. Okay. A very short movie, 173 minutes.
Just under 3 hours long.
Wait, what did I say?
173 minutes.
73 minutes.
Oh my God, it's like this is the Irishman of Sesame Street movies.
The Irishman of Elmo.
It's called The Irishman of Elmo.
It's called I Heard You Like
Blankets.
Blankets. What is Elmo's The Adventures of Elmo in Grouchland about?
So Elmo wakes up in the morning next to his poster of Tiger Woods. And
he's like, oh my God, what happened last night?
And then he sings this little song about his blanket that he loves. It's sentient.
It's like Magic Carpet from Aladdin.
Yeah. And then he...
can't fly.
The best part of the carpet. And then he is walking through town and then he sees Zoe, who's upset. And he cheers her up, and then she's like, give me that blanket. And he's like, no, and then it rips. And then he's so distraught. And then there are a series of hilarious happenstances. The blanket falls into Oscar the Grouch's trash can and falls into Grouchland.
Mm.
And Elmo goes after it. And then Mandy Patinkin's there.
Plays
he's
Huxley.
The bad guy. He's selfish.
He's a Orwellian dictator who rules over Grouchland, and his central sin is that he's selfish and he takes things because they're his.
Yeah. And then,
including the blanket.
Yeah. And then they go on a quest to get
the blanket. Elmo goes on a whirlwind 45-minute adventure to get back his beloved blankie. And at the end, when he gets back home, he's learnt the importance of not being selfish, and seeing a distorted Black Mirror reflection of himself in Huxley. And so he shares the blanket with Zoe, which means he lets her hold it. And she goes, "I can hold it." And he goes, "Yep."
That's what you do with a
blanket.
Yeah.
It's not like it's a toy. If it was a toy, it's like, I can play with it. It's like, yes, there's actual value to this.
Yeah.
But no, I can hold the blanket. Sure can, Zoe. Don't know why I got angry about this in the first place.
Yeah, well, she ripped it.
And it is a sentient blanket, as you said, which is something probably belongs in a museum and not in the hands of...
It belongs in a museum!
What did you think of this movie?
It's pretty boring.
Pretty boring? It's 73 minutes.
Yeah. It took us like over 2 hours to watch as well, because we watched it together first time since
what one?
For the podcast, for this podcast, RoboCop 2014, I think. Mm. For anything, it would be Cinderella Story Princess Christmas Wish, which was for Film Franchise Follow Ups.
Very nice.
All the trees and all the presents
for Santa. When did we watch Eternal Sunshine? Was that before or after Cinderella Story Christmas Wish? Because we're in the same room for
that. No, you were at Eternal Sunshine. You were at your last flat. Christmas Wish. You were here.
I was too.
Yeah.
Holy shit! Don't remember that. Cool. Okay. So this.
I don't know. It's very whatever.
Yeah. There's some fun.
I enjoyed more spending time with you than I did watching the film.
Because I supplied you with wine and cheese.
Well, I didn't get any wine.
Oh, cheese and crackers. You can have some wine if you want.
Off you go.
Right now, do you want some wine?
Oh, yeah, if you want.
No.
Oh, God damn it.
What's the time? It's 4:45.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere. It's quarter of an hour for now.
Wine before 5? we can have some wine after this if you want.
Okay.
I've been drinking too much lately.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Sesame Street episode.
Well, we're going to be recording something very special for our Patreon after this, which maybe might be better if we've had a couple of beers.
I don't have any beer. Sorry, wines.
Absinthe.
Yeah, have some absinthe. So this, I'd seen this movie before. I'd seen it, I think... We got it out on VHS for my little sister when she was like 3. So this movie came out in 1999. She was born in 2001. No, 2000? 2000.
Yeah, you said she just turned 20.
Yeah. Which means that this was not like a new release. We did not see this as a new release. We saw it as like a five-night, hire, which are always the creepiest ones from video stores. Like, why are you getting this? Get a new release. Releases are inherently better. And the only thing I really remembered from it is that Bert and Ernie routinely pause the movie where Bert
reference Dr. Zhivago.
Yeah, Bert is distraught that bad things are happening in the movie, and it's up to Ernie to let him know that this is a movie.
You see, now that's if that's not us.
And there's a scene, there's the last time they do it, I think, it's like right at the like false victory of the plot where Elmo gets slingshotted by a giant chicken halfway across Grouchland, which, by the way, they tell you at the start is Grouchland, USA, meaning he hasn't gone through like a portal to another dimension. Yeah.
He's just in Illinois.
Yeah.
That would have been a good chance to dunk on a state, but I mean, like Florida.
Florida? You reckon Grouchland is in Florida?
Well, everyone hates Florida.
Mm. Got some fans from Florida.
Huh?
We've got some fans from Florida.
Yeah, but I think they know that. Doesn't everyone hates? That's like a thing.
Gas Cadet, is Florida bad? Do you like living there? Tell us on the Discord.
Yeah. I don't know. Just like every election, everyone's like, oh, fucking hell, Florida. You did it again.
Bert and Ernie pause the movie, and Bert's like, this is so sad, we can't keep watching this. And Ernie's like, it's a movie, it's going to have a happy ending. What movie doesn't have a happy ending? And Bert goes, Titanic. Titanic didn't have a happy ending. And as they're walking away, he goes, Gone with the Wind, Dr. Zhivago, which is like the most grown-up probably joke in it. What did you think of Mandy Patinkin's performance?
Yeah, it's funny. I said to you in the film, like, it feels like he came off the back of watching Muppet Christmas Carol and Muppet Treasure Island. They're like, oh, we want you to be in a film with Muppets. And he was like, I'll do it.
Mm.
And then realized it wasn't as prestigious of an opportunity.
Mm.
He's fine, though. He gets to flex his singing chops.
Yeah, I thought he sounded a bit like Nathan Lane at points.
Yeah, I feel like he sounds more like someone else, but I couldn't put my finger on
who it was. I think he sings the best song in the film.
Yeah.
Which is about how everything's his. Yeah. It's the villain song.
Yeah.
Which I think it got nominated? Let me check.
Really? Wow.
I don't know if that song specifically got nominated.
Okay, all right. Well, let's...
No.
No.
No, it doesn't look like it did. All right.
Got it. How do you feel?
How long have we got? Oh, this is going to be a short little bonus film franchise Fortnite. But this one's for kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about alcoholism and dunked on our ex's new lovers, but well, I did all these things. But
yeah, I said the F word a couple of times.
Did you? Did you?
Go get the soap. Did you ever get your mouth washed out?
No, it was near. I don't even remember even being threatened by it.
Really?
I remember understanding the joke, the inherent joke of getting your mouth washed out.
Yeah.
Because you got a dirty mouth.
I think it happened to me.
Damn.
Yeah. Fucking parents.
Oh, no. Don't trust your parents, kids.
Yeah.
So I've got some dumb IMDb trivia for this movie.
Okay.
Mandy Patinkin was a last-minute replacement for the original actor who was to play Huxley.
Nathan Lane.
Doesn't say.
Oh, right.
That's what makes it dumb. It's like, that's the part of the trivia, you fools.
Yeah.
You fools. Who was going to play him originally? And then down the bottom of the page, the scene in which Elmo launches the basket onto Huxley, which is how he defeats him.
Getting like a wicker basket falls on him and he's completely trapped.
was the most complicated scene to film. First of all, in order to show Elmo's full body as he fell on the board, they had to use the active Elmo puppet to film in front of a blue screen. Second, the filmmakers, to fabricate Elmo having launched the basket in the air, so the basket had to be dropped from a certain angle. Third, the basket had to land directly on top of Huxley. And then fourth, Huxley had to look suitably frustrated when the basket landed on him.
The hardest part was getting
Mandy Patinkin to act, goddammit. and the last piece of dumb IMDb trivia I've got for you is an early concept for the movie involved Elmo losing his ball in Oscar's can rather than his blanket. So maybe that should have been what it was. Because you can actually play with a ball.
Yeah.
But Elmo having a ball...
Not on my watch.
Elmo felt like a big part of my life for a long time.
I think Elmo felt like a big part of this movie.
Mm. Yeah, he did. Probably but I used to watch Elmo's
arguably
World.
The main character.
I was definitely too old for Elmo's World by the time I was watching it.
Yeah.
But there were funny parts with Mr. Noodle, who I've seen play a drug addict and something else, which is fun.
Right.
Yeah. I think the guy from Stephen Tobolsky, I think, has played Mr. Noodle before. Watch out for the cord. You'll be able to hear that.
Sorry, fans.
someone like that has played Mr. Noodle, who's Elmo's next door neighbor, who plays
pranks. That sounds right.
And things. Or it might not be him. It might be it's not him. It's the guy from shit. I'm gonna find out what his name is.
I'd rather you think of it.
No. We're going to figure this out.
Describe him to
me. I'll just write.
Tell me some of his roles.
Who played Mr. Noodle? I can't think of any of like his main roles. Only like he was in the X-Files. Noodle, I can't think of anything is what I Googled.
All right.
Mr. Noodle, Elmo's World.
According to Wikipedia, Mr. Noodle and his siblings, Mr. Noodle.
Bill Irwin.
Yep.
That's who played him?
No, that's one of them. There's several. There's siblings because it'll be like it's Mr. Noodle's brother, Mr. Noodle, and then he had. So Michael Jeter played Mr. Noodle's brother, Mr. Noodle, who was in fucking Ear Bud. He's the clown in Ear Bud. Kristen Chenoweth played Mr. Noodle's sister, Ms. Noodle.
David Diggs. Played one of Mr. Noodle's brother.
Really?
Yeah, Thomas Jefferson from Hamilton.
That's awesome. Maybe Steven Tobolsky didn't do it.
Anyway, this is very good content. Should we continue that franchise?
Continue the franchise, yep. What is your sequel to... what is your new Sesame Street movie? Oh, wait, there are some...
Yeah, sorry, yeah, do you want me to do this? I've got it up.
I've got one that won't be on your page, though.
All right, okay.
But I know what you're going to talk about.
What am I going to talk about?
You're going to talk about the upcoming Sesame Street movie.
I am. Well, you do your stupid one, then.
It's so stupid. It's so not okay. as good.
Oh, really?
But it's like, we're comprehensive.
Yeah, all right. Are you going to do it?
I'm sure I am, dude.
Okay, off you go.
All right. Elmo's Adventures in Grouchland, book series. The film inspired a trilogy of children's books published in 1999 called Happy Grouch Day, The Grouchiest Lovey, and Unwelcome to Grouchland.
Nice.
Could do them for Continue the Franchise.
We could do. So I'm here to talk about...
Continue the Franchise, I mean... From film franchise follow-ups.
So there is an upcoming Muppet movie set to be released in January of 2022 by Warner Brothers, which would actually make it the next Warner Brothers release to not be straight to HBO Max.
You said Muppet movie, you mean Sesame Street.
I did say, yeah, I meant Sesame Street. Currently untitled. Looking to star Anne Hathaway. It was supposed to come out like this year or next year, but it, because of her commitments with the witches, it was delayed. And so it's now supposed to come out, but it was supposed to film earlier this year. But of course, things happened.
COVID. COVID.
Thank you. Speaking of COVID, there's a bit in this film in Elmo and Grouchland that you couldn't do.
So they talk to the audience throughout it. They're like, what's, you know?
Like the door explorer kind of thing of like, is it over there?
Yeah. And the one of the ways that Elmo gets out of one of the many adventures in Grouchland that he has is he meets like the garbage queen.
Vanessa Williams.
Yeah. And she says the only way she's going to let him go is if he blows 100 raspberries in 30 seconds, which a Muppet, let alone a human, cannot do.
Yeah, and the rice would be like,
and so Elmo then turns to the camera and says, "Hey, children in the audience, start just fucking spitting everywhere in the audience," and he's talking to a movie theater much like Tenet, Elmo's Adventures in Grouchland needed to come out in cinemas. And so you're supposed to just start going, imagine being a fucking parent in that cinema and being like, Jesus
heavy
Christ.
Kids sit behind you, the back of your neck. Just
bad idea.
Them.
Bad call even in 1999.
God. But imagine doing that in a cinema in 2020.
This would be one of those famous things where it's like a Muppet. If this came out this year, it'd be like cut from the film as a scene.
But the kind of most interesting thing for me anyway about the upcoming Sesame Street movie is that Bo Burnham is writing the music for it, much in the same way that Brett McKenzie did.
That's a good idea. And
it's not an idea, it's reality.
Well, it's a good idea for them to make it reality.
Well, okay.
I feel like this will be very different to Follow That Bird.
I feel like, and it was going to be my Continue the Franchise before I was like, well, they're already doing it. but essentially like making it more like The Muppets 2011. Mm. Because Sesame Street is kind of in a bad ways these days. I mean, like the whole idea of it was that it was on PBS, so it was accessible to everyone. And then it moved to HBO, I guess at risk of, because it was at risk of being, not being made. So HBO said, well, we'll foot the bill. HBO, famously a very premium service, and I could be getting details of this wrong because I don't live in the States. Like maybe the Muppet, Sesame Street is like a more accessible version of HBO, whatever. But now it's only on HBO Max, and it's like parts of it animated. But like, I would like to see Sesame Street 2022, like really, it be like about bringing back Sesame Street in the same way that the Muppets 2011 was. And it's like Anne Hathaway's your Jason Segel character who is a journalist who stumbles upon Sesame Street, wants to do a follow up on them on what happened to Sesame Street, and then they find out something magical. It exists in a place that's been cut off from the rest of the world, and everyone learns to care again.
That's good. That's what the world will need in 2022.
Yeah. What's your idea?
Well, I was going to pitch a Grouchland storybook spinoff, but that's already been done. Yeah. I mean, what is a grouch?
Yeah.
Because...
I mean, it's made pretty explicitly clear on this that they're from Grouchland, USA.
But what is the difference between, like, an Elmo and a grouch?
Well, Elmo's a monster.
Right. Okay. This isn't my continue the franchise.
Well, this is just a discussion point.
How about...
A Cookie Monster movie.
He's the one left behind, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where's my cookie?
You got a bigger movie? You got a, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's about, like, you could do a, you know, Silver Linings Playbook, how the movie starts and Bradley Cooper has lost a bunch of weight. You never see what he looked like when he was fat. But, like, do Silver Linings Cookie Lining Playbook.
Wow. What about a Bert and Ernie movie?
What would it be about?
It's about Bert and Ernie starting a podcast. That causes
and they
them,
can't decide which one's Richard and which one's
yeah,
AJ.
And that causes them to re-examine their friendship. But not in a good way. Like it's a
not in a good way.
In a good way.
Right.
It's a movie about embracing friendship.
Right.
And being
healthy
being,
masculinity.
Yeah. Let's get a Bert and Ernie healthy masculinity movie.
Yeah, a movie that finally but then you have like a female Ernie and a female Bert to show that like they're not gay.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's made by it's a Rise of Skywalker, directed by J.J. Abrams.
It's called Bert and Ernie Aren't Gay. Hey, well that about
Bert
does
and Ernie
it
just friends
for this episode. Best friends and friends is in bold. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for listening to this year of Film Franchise Fortnights and the Cult Popture Podcast. We've got, you know, despite this being the last Film Franchise Fortnights for the year, there's not really a plan to do any kind of brief hiatus or anything. We're just going to, there'll be a new episode next week as
there
always. Yeah,
but we're just Film Franchise Fortnights. We'll be taking a little bit of
that's
a break.
That's true, yeah.
Because, yeah, and so we'll be doing our typical look back at the year that was of movies, which we call our most disappointing, and then we'll be looking at the year to come, or hopefully to come, because as we found out, there's a lot of changes to the release schedule, which, yeah, so a lot of them we will have talked about at the start of this year.
But there's a new perspective on all of these now.
Exactly, a lot of them we have more information about, but yeah, I think we've currently got that in our calendar to be called movies we hope come out in 2021.
It changes every year now, that damn title. Cool, so stay tuned for all of that. There might be a few other bonus like off-week episodes that come out consecutively. We're still figuring out when we're going to launch Film Franchise Fortnights 2021. Season 5?
So 2016, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. Season 6. Four.
It's too long.
That's too long for your podcast to not be considered successful.
Although
we both bought PS5s this year from
We haven't announced that publicly. I don't know if we should, but I'm not ashamed of it.
Yeah.
We used a bit of the Patreon money to buy ourselves each a PlayStation 5, which you might go like, you're spending Patreon money on that. And it's like,
now we can keep up to date on PS5 releases to make content. Not that we ever really make content about video games, but maybe we can now because we have PS5.
And also, we don't earn enough from the Patreon to do much else with it than, than do
then
something
save
like
it up
this.
For a few months and do that.
So thank you to all the patrons out
thank
there.
Thank you so much. Yeah, like generally, because I'm on holiday at the moment. I'm down seeing my family. And it's funny to be like, you know, you're supposed to send to my family. It's like, I've got to go record podcasts with AJ all day. And it's like, I feel like I'm deserting you, but it's like, I get paid hundreds of dollars to do this.
it's true. You do.
It's like, I actually, you know, I have a schedule I need to keep. And I have people that rely on me talking about movies.
Yeah. And we get paid enough to pay a week's worth of rent each month, that's okay. And maybe we'll get more. And if you want to actually donate, you can join the Patreon yourself. You can donate as little as $1 a month, which is such a minuscule amount of money that
I don't even notice it.
I don't really understand why someone wouldn't do that if they were a fan.
Yeah.
You know, just calling them out.
Dr. Barrel.
That's over at... patreon.com/cultpopture where you can donate there.
For $1 a month, you get to suggest every second franchise. And because we're taking a break in January, there'll be something else.
So what it is it's you get podcasts early. And when you can't vote, you get podcasts early.
Although we do have something that will come out in January for all patrons.
including $1 tiers.
Do we?
Yeah. We're about to record our
first. That thing. Well, yeah. I mean, that'll probably go just on YouTube, won't it?
I mean, maybe we'll do it on Patreon.
It's for the patrons, but it's like...
Yeah, maybe we'll put it on Patreon for like a week and then release it on
YouTube.
Okay,
that's a good idea. So yeah, that'll be there. And for $5, you get an extra podcast where we talk about film franchise follow-up. So we follow up a film franchise we've done with a new piece of content or a new piece of media.
So it could be something that's been released since we recorded the podcast on it. Or it's, like you just talked about in... with this one where Alwyn Grouchland had a book trilogy spin-off that we cover things like that, extra media that aren't films.
Yep, and you also get ad-free podcasts. You get them a few hours early on $5, and you also get to give us a post-credits scene topic, which we'll talk about more and actually just literally do in a little bit, which is at the end of each episode after the music that you're probably hearing now if we finish very quickly after this.
Well, we've talked about the $10 tier.
$10 tier, which is another podcast called Generic Movie Podcast, where we talk about a movie that you have suggested and voted on. Yeah.
And each tier gives you the benefits of the tiers below it as well.
And then there's now, recently, as of this year, there's also a $15 tier, which is where you get to join us in discussing one of the classics in our cult classic movie club, where
which is if you want to test the waters of that, see if it's worth donating, check out Cult Popture 2.
Yes, TOO exclamation mark.
Our second YouTube channel where we put things like
the podcast you're listening to right now.
And the cult classic movie club and that thing we talked about.
Yep.
We'll probably go on there.
And so what that is an experimental podcast where anyone who has the link can join it.
Yeah.
I think the most we've had so far is 8 people podcast.
Yeah. It was too many for me to be able to see in one screen because I was recording on my phone and I had to keep swiping depending on who was talking.
Nice. So join all of that. There's also $1,000. We didn't talk about $1,000 tier.
Yeah.
No one's ever bought it, in case you're aware. Yeah. And if you want to support Cold Popture, as you have been doing this whole year, we're on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, all over the place. Just look up Cold Popture and just click follow, like, subscribe, and whatever social media.
Look up Cold Popture and you'll find AJ's address.
Not anymore. So it was actually my parents' address, and I quickly fix that. Stay tuned for the post-credit scene coming up right now. And Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
Merikirahimite.
I am a little choked up at all the support we've got. The Discord as well.
Yeah, join the Discord.
Join the Discord if you want to chat to us like real people. It's a great time, and we're all ready to jump back into it next year. So we'll see you later. Bye. La 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 la. La 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 la. Best joke in Big Bird's Follow That Big Bird is when he's walking along and it's just a shot of his feet and he's like la 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 la, and then it fades to like some time later and he's walking very slowly going la la la. I thought that was a great one for the parents. Alright, see you later everybody.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, welcome to the Patreon post-credits scene. You can't tell, but there was nigh a second of delay between the end of the episode and this. And today we're going to be doing a post-credits scene, which is if you donate $5 or more to our Patreon, which we just spent an exorbitant amount of time talking about, you can give us something to talk about in our post-credits scene. And this post-credits scene comes to us from Josh Monson. And he says... and I'm reading this on my phone, which makes it a lot more difficult than you might think. What a movie you thought... Fuck.
If you, like, tap on it, it should show the whole message, right? Or if you go to edit it.
Oh, no. Okay. What's a movie you thought was great growing up and then later realized it was bad? He then goes on to say, I had so much fun with... Batman and Robin, I think he's saying. only on DVD. I would make my family watch it with me. Now I know the depths of their love for me.
Yeah.
That was fun to read like that. So, Josh, I don't have a lot of... We were talking about these in my office the other day, and I don't have a lot of stories like this where I have like a movie that it's like, oh, I loved this, but now I know it's terrible.
Yeah.
Do you have any? I mean, I liked Batman and Robin, I guess, but not for
There's movies where I'm like, I don't know that I ever thought they were good. I just enjoyed them. Like, I feel like I've been, for a lot of my life, like, have been pretty good at distinguishing, like, I enjoy this, not this is good. Mm. The one kind of thing that springs to mind, and it's not even something I necessarily enjoyed that much, but the Tigger movie. that's like my parents took us to see that, and I was like just a little bit too old for, or like I was aging out of it rapidly as the movie went on. I was aging out of the demographic, but my parents took me to it, and that's like the example they always use of like being made to sit through a kid's film that has nothing for the adults. You know, and yeah, they mentioned that this week.
I've heard them mention that as well. And I've, like, how many times will I have talked to your parents?
100?
No. Like, I've probably seen them like 10 times in my life, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I've heard them talk about the Tigger movie. A movie that's so inoffensive. My mum loves Tigger. Really? Like, complete opposite story with the Tigger movie for my family.
Well, I think it's just like, because they talk about it being like, oh my God, this arduous task sitting through this movie. It's like 64 minutes long or something like that. But yeah, and it's one of those movies, like, I don't remember particularly liking it or anything like that. My parents could not stand it.
I think going a bit further in life, we might have talked about this before, for a long time, two of my favorite movies as an edgy teenager were The Butterfly Effect and The Number 23. The Joel Schumacher, Jim Carrey movie. And within a year after being like, these are my favorite movies, was like, these are pretty bad.
I haven't revisited them since knowing that they're bad.
Right.
But I think you'd never seen The Butterfly Effect.
Seen it quite a few. You used to have it on DVD.
I used to quite like that movie as well. But yeah, it's one of those movies that people talk about being really bad. And
Dope if you're 14.
Yeah,
my God, the coolest thing ever.
Yeah. The kind of other thing that springs to mind in terms of like revisiting and, well, I don't know, is like I'm currently reading Ready Player 2, so this is just at the front of my mind. But I love Ready Player 1, the book. It's bad, but I love it. Ready Player 2 is the exact same as the first one. No matter how you felt about the first one, you will feel that again reading the second one.
The moment that I didn't understand at the time that now I'm like, was when in my media studies class in year 12, when the students were talking about The Butterfly Effect versus Donnie Darko.
Yeah.
And our very cool, very trendy media studies teacher was like, nah, listen, guys, The Butterfly Effect is cool. Donnie Darko is like proper awesome.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand that at the time. And now looking back, I'm like, I actually know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, right.
It's trying to convey the difference between sure and this is this is so different.
Yeah,
you know? So yeah. Hope that answers your question, Josh. See you later. This podcast.
See you next year.
The early episodes of this podcast is my answer to this question.
Yeah, yeah. Back when you used to be like, oh, why is no one listening?
Oh, that's why.
if only people just listened, it would be huge.
Which is so different from how we are now.
Yeah, but now it's correct.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.